I assume I usually give out outlines.
Like an outline. So the guy came over to me and he said, you know, Rabbi, I went to a shiur of yours 5 years ago in Philadelphia, and I was really touched by the fact that right after the shiur, I came over to you, I said, I really like the shiur, and you just said, here, would you like an outline? And you gave it to me, and I felt like touched. And then I saw you give it out to everyone today. I felt like it's nothing special. Baruch Hashem, he's still from, but anyway, okay.
My first time being a speaker, I was in college in San Diego 2007 on Shalom TV.
Shalom TV. I do a Gemara class on Shalom TV. Yeah. I was actually on 37th Street, Manhattan, and a truck pulled up next to me and said, "Hey," and I'm looking like, and he says, "Rabbi Becker," and I said, "Yeah," and he gets out of the truck. He's wearing a T-shirt from an Irish pub, and he did look somewhat, you know, Gentile Irish, and he said he watches my Talmud class on Shalom TV. He's a Christian Zionist. He loves it. He loves the Talmud. And thank you very much. That was okay. All right. Enough bizarre experiences, because I could go on forever on that. Fine. Let's begin first of all with the fact that really we are all obligated to be involved in Kiruv Rechokim, especially if you are a Rav of a Shul. What is the purpose of being a Rav? Is not to paskin shailas. That's part of what you do. Not to give a drosha, that's part of what you do, but basically to bring people close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to the Torah. I mean, so Kiruv. And however the person looks, you could do Kiruv in Williamsburg. I have done that. Not incredibly successfully, but nevertheless, right, so Kiruv is something which is bringing people close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bringing people close to the Torah. Everyone is involved in that. There are a number of obligations. First of all, perhaps the most obvious, ve'ahavta l'reacha kamoicha. So if you look at the Ramban there in Vayikra Yutes, on that pasuk, the Ramban says, what does it mean that you love your neighbors yourself? Sheyachbot, you should desire. Sheyizke re'ehu ahuvlo, that the friend that is beloved to you, you should want him to be ba'osher b'nechosim b'kovod uv'da'as uv'chochma. I want him to have everything I've got, whether it's in wealth, in property, but and also kavod, da'as, and chochma. If I've got Torah, I would like if I'm supposed to love every Jew, I want every Jew to have the Torah as well. So the after Akamaka, very simple, very obviously, obligates me to bring other Jews close to Torah. A very famous and beautiful perek in the Tanya that's really required reading. Perek Lamed Beis, easy to remember, Leiv, right? So the Tanya there points out that that which it says in the in Pirkei Avos, where it says that says having the Talmid of Shalaron, Oyev Shalom, Roedev Shalom, Oyev Esabrius and Makarvan Latoira. So the Tanya asks an interesting question. The Tanya asks that that Oyev Esabrius or Makarvan Latoira. If you're calling someone a Bria, what does the word Bria mean? Literally, a creature. So he says you have to love people. So if you're calling someone a creature, a Bria, what does that say? That he doesn't really have much merit other than the fact that God created him. So if you imagine writing on your resume, right, the only thing on your resume, created by God. So as devoted as we are monotheists, yes, but I don't think I'd be impressed. I wouldn't give you a job, right? I mean, it's like, so what? Naked mole rats also created by God, right? So therefore... Tanya points out that if it says Oyev Esabrius Makarvan Torah, it means even a person who is on the lowest possible level, you have to love such a person, even though his only merit is God created him, and you have to bring such a person close to Torah. But he then asks an interesting question, and this is actually there's a Gemara. The Gemara says Oyev Lifroik V'Soina Liton, right? If you have the person who you love to let's say, you know, to help him with his unload something from the donkey. Now, if you're unloading, lifroik, right, there's two mitzvahs involved, right? There's, first of all, you're helping the other person, and second of all, what? Alleviating pain to the animal, tzar balechayim, right? And yet, you've got an oyhev lit on, and, a soina lit on, to load up the animal. So in the case of loading up the animal, there's only one component. What's the one component? The one component is the Bob Metzia Lama base. The one component is you're helping him. So the Gemara there says, famously what? Oyev Lifroik. You've got the one who you love, you're going to unload the donkey, and the one who you, person you hate, you're going to load it up. Who takes priority? Sonny, the one you don't like, the guy you don't like. Even though there's two pluses on the guy that you don't like, the guy that you like, and there's only one plus. So why? What does the Gemara say? Lakuf es yitzroi, to overcome your evil inclination that you hate him. So now Tosfos asks an interesting question. Tosfos in Psachim, Kuf Yud Gimel, the Gemara in Psachim says, who is the person in the Torah that is called your soineh? Clearly, we know you're not allowed to hate another Jew. So if he's called a soineh, who is he? So the Gemara says, Ro'o boy dvar erva, you saw that he did a crime of a sexual nature, a serious crime, erva, right? Gila arayas. You know that he did it. Apparently, you were machiach him, he didn't listen to you. And such a person is a rosha. So therefore, you're allowed to hate him. So if the soine mentioned is someone who you're allowed to have hatred for, how could it be that there's lakuf es yitzroi? Lakuf es yitzroi means overcome yetzer. It's not a yetzer horror, I'm doing the right thing. Question's clear? So the Gemara in Bava Metzia, which says that the person you hate, you have to help in order to be overcome yetzer hara, is a contradiction to the Gemara in Pesachim, which says the person you hate, you're allowed to hate because Ra'a boy dvar erva, he did some horrific crime, and you therefore you're allowed to hate him. So what's going on? So Tosfos answers, very interesting answer. It's very a little enigmatic. Tosfos answers. They say the following: Kaven shehu soinoi, if you hate this guy, gam chavera soina oisoi, he'll also hate you. Diksiv kamayim apanim apanim kein lev adam la'odom, as the water reflects a face, so the heart of one person reflects that of the other. Uba'im mitoch kach lidei sina gemura. And you'll come to complete hatred, v'shayach kfiya sayetzer, and therefore it is relevant to say, overcome your yetzahara. So what are the Tosfos saying? They're saying that there's two types of hatred. There's one hatred which is not allowed, that's called sina gemura. And that is kfiyas yetzer. You have to overcome the yetzer hara. And there's another hatred, which is okay, which is the Gemara in Pesachim. So the Gemara in Pesachim says, Ra boy far erva, and you can hate it. There's a level of hatred you're allowed to have, and there's a level of hatred called sinah gemura that you are not allowed to have. So that, Tosfos does not explain to us what is the sinah gemura and what is not the sinah gemura. So how do we understand this? So based on the Tanya in Perek Lamed Beis, maybe we can say the following. That the sinner, I'll just quote the Tanya to you. Tanya says this. He says, Ama hilal azakin, hevi mitalmidosh ha'oivas abriyos ha'makarvan l'toira, loima, sha'af ha'rechoikim mitoras Hashem v'avodos, even those who are very distant from the Torah of Hashem and from his worship, ulechein nikroim b'shem briyos ba'alma, and nevertheless, and therefore they're called creatures. Sarich lamoshcham bechevli avoyses ha'avi, you have to draw them close with cables of love. V'chulei ha'ivu ulai, yachol ha'karvan l'toira v'avodas Hashem. And maybe, you'll be able to bring them close to Torah and avoyses Hashem. V'hein lo'hifsid schar avas mitzvah savas reimer. Obviously, you've not lost out on the fact that it's very obvious that you're fulfilling the mitzvah of love of your fellow Jew. V'gam ha'makuravim eitz love, v'elav v'chicham. Ah. And even those who were close to him, and he was mochiach them, v'loy shavu ma'avonaseyem, and they did not go back and turn away from their sin, she mitzvah l'snoisam, where from the Gemara in Pesachim there's a mitzvah to hate, he says, mitzvah l'ahavam gankein. It's a mitzvah to love them too. Shteyem emes. They're both true. Sina mitzad harasha behem, V'ava mitzad bechinas hatoiv haganus shebehem shunitzat ha'eloki hamekayimam. He says hatred of the evil in them, but love for the spark of godliness in them, which is mechaya then a shoma. So basically, he says you've got to have really both. So I have to, and some would interpret maybe sina gemura. Maybe when Tosfos says sina gemura, that means total hatred, no love even for the spark of godliness and for the good in them. And maybe the sinner that's allowed is a hatred for the act, for the evil, but not for the person as a whole. So maybe that's the pshat and Tosfos. There are other possibilities. I'm open to that. But I think that's the pshat based on Tanya. Interestingly, when I asked Reb Moshe Shapiro, I asked my Rebbe Reb Moshe Shapiro, pshat and Tosfos, he referred me to the Tanya. And we asked another, I forgot who else we asked, And he also referred us to the Tanya. So they both felt that the Tanya may be the Pshat in that Tosfos. Be that as it may, we have here obviously the mitzvah of loving the person. And, by the way, if we're already in the sphere of Chassidus, the Likutei Moharan from Nachman of Breslov, Siman Reish Pei Beis, quite famously says that the only way you can actually be Makarev someone is if you believe that deep down they are good. And the way he puts it is, Al yedei ze she'ata moitze ba'od ma'at tov she'shamei narasha, through finding in that person an element of good, in which that area of their life, that area of their soul, they're not evil, ata dano so le kafskus, and you judge him favorably, Al yedei ze ata male oiso be'enemes mikafchoi ve'le kafskus, then you are able to elevate him from the from choiva to skus. So that's from a purely halachic perspective, and there's hashkafa involved here, but halachic perspective, we see the mitzvah of Ahavas Reim can apply even simultaneous with the sinas hara. Also, there could be exceptions to this. If you look at the Bir Halacha in Siman Aleph, very famously he says, he quotes the where it says there, Al yizbayish b'fnei amaligin alav b'toras Hashem, you should not be embarrassed in the presence of those who disparage you in the service of Hashem. So there, the he says, Al kolponim lo yiskoite imahem, but you should nevertheless not argue with them. And the Mishnah Berurah says, because the midah of azus, of that type of audaciousness to argue with people, is not appropriate. But in the Bir Halacha, he says, however, that which it says in the positive, right, mesanecha Hashem esne uviskoimecha eskoimem, those who hate you, Hashem, I hate. Those who rise up against you, I rise up against them, which implies that you should be arguing with them. The Bir Halacha says, Mishnah Berurah, same person, right? He says, that's only, he says, if they're rising up in the sphere of in a public sphere and trying to eradicate or to annul something in the Torah, then he said it's a mitzvah to get up and argue with them and etc. Of course, not always is that the best strategy, but he's saying that's when it's okay. Next obligation is fairly obvious. It's hocheach tochiach esamisecha. In the mitzvah of hocheach tochiach, and Vayikra Yutes as well, loisisna sechicha belvabecha hocheach tochiach esamitecha. Right, so there the Rambam says, haroya chaveiro shechata o shehalach b'derech lo toiva, mitzvah lachzir lemutav. So we see that it's not only if he's doing it something which is an explicit aveira, right? It's halach b'derech lo toiva. There's also a mitzvah of hocheach tochiach, and the mitzvah of hocheach tochiach is past, present, and future, meaning it's in order to prevent him from doing it in future, prevent him from doing it now, and to, in general, see if you can get the person to do teshuva. It is interesting to note, and I think it's important to note, that there are a number of major conditions in hocheach tochiach, as I'm sure you are aware. Obviously, we know it's a mitzvah saseh, and mitzvah saseh applies whatever the person's being over on. However, there are a couple of conditions. One of the most famous is the condition that if he's mazid, or if he's doing something b'shoigeg, right, and by telling him you're going to make him in a mazid, so in such a situation, what's the halacha? So we all know, the Gemara says in Yuma that mutav shu, right, it says, hanach lehem liYisrael, leave the Jews alone, mutav shu shoigegin, value mazinim, better that they be shoigeg and not mazin. And if I'm pretty sure they're not going to listen to me, and I, by telling them, all that's going to happen is now they know that it's osir, so now, what would we say? Better to keep your mouth shut. So, the problem here is, what happens to, can you ever give a shir? Can I ever give a shir in halacha? Right, unless we have the bouncer at the door, right, yeah, can you sign here please, sir? Right, I mean, sign a commitment that you're like an arbitration agreement. You know, you'll everything the rabbi says you'll listen to. So every rabbi gets up and gives a shir. So that's it's a bit problematic, right? How are you supposed to even say anything? So you know, the Rav Hirsch actually says, I'm trying to find a source for Rav Hirsch here. I can't see it, but it's in the PDF that Rabbi Orlian sent out. You will have this. Here it is. So Rav Hirsch actually says this in his Parish on the Chumash on Vayikra there, and he quotes a Ritva. Right, Rav Hirsch says, look, he says that which it says Hanach Lem LiYisrael Mutu Shogam Azuni is only B'Shas HaAveira. It's only, the Ritva says, only B'Shas HaAveira. At the time of the Aveira, that's when you should not say anything if you're just going to make him from Shogam to Mazin. But if it's not B'Shas HaAveira, he says, then clearly, he says, you're obligated to teach Torah. Right? Why? Right? He says very clearly that in Loikain, Yizgaber, the loss of the Ritva, Chay Mistaver Tuva, in Loikain Chas V'Shalom, Tigaber HaBoyrus B'Torah. Ignorance will overpower Torah. So he says, to give a shear in general, even though I know that people will not necessarily listen to what I'm saying, will not necessarily follow the halacha I'm telling them, etc. So he says that's clearly okay. But B'Shas HaAveira, that's when you have to have you have to know when to say something, when to not. Also, another point that I should make is the whole idea of turning someone from Mazid to Shogeg to Mazid is only if when I tell them that it's Osir, they actually understand what that means. Example, average non-religious Jew. When I say, did you know that Jewish law forbids that? So what's in their mind, what do they understand? Or even less, they say, oh, so religious Jews shouldn't do it. Right? Not like they understand, oh, that means I am now, by divine command, right, prohibited from participating. I don't think they understand it in that way. Right? They just don't think, okay, so something which Orthodox, so I'm not Orthodox, so obviously I'm not obligated. Right? Or I'm not religious, so obviously I'm not obligated. Or, okay, is it Mashusha Datimos, you know, so whatever, Shiga Onshe. Right? Does it really turn them into Mazin? I don't think so. I think an average secular Jew, if I tell them, you know, the Mishnah Berurah says that's also, like, what, you know, are you serious? Right? So I don't know if that really turns them into Mazin in that sense. Also, very, very important, in terms of not the Chi of Toichacha, but the Oifen HaToichacha. That is really very crucial. We know from the Gemara, right, and from the Chumash itself, the implication is when the Chumash says that Elotis alavchet hachef tichzametecha v'loisis alavchet, don't. So how do you translate that? So the Gemara understands that don't do a chet in your toichacha, meaning be mochia someone in public and therefore embarrassing them or humiliating them is clearly osur. So therefore, you certainly shouldn't say anything. However, it goes even a little further than that. Right, a lot further than that. First of all, Rashi, the Rambam says, and it's also Rashi has a similar lashon. You should be machiach the lashon racha ubederech kavod. You should never rebuke someone in such a way which is not lashon racha, meaning soft spoken, ubederech kavod and respectfully. And there's a fascinating keser rosh ruchayim v'lashonim. Keser rosh kuf mem gimel. He says that this is ma'akev. Meaning, right, if you're not able to be mochiach, the loshon racha, soft-spoken way, in a gentle way, you're potter. Now, it's amazing how many people are machmir in this particular mitzvah, right? But it's not something where chumrah is a good idea, right? Not always is chumrah a good idea. And so I read a great article, actually in a sefer, who quotes two poskim in Warsaw before the Second World War. One was famous as being a machmir, the other was a famous makel. And they met at the mikveh, like before Yom Kippur. So the machmir says to the makel, he says, good for you that Yom Kippur's coming. With all your coolers, you're going to need it. So the makel says to the machmir, he says, but at least for me it'll help. So the machmir says, what are you talking about? He says, well, he says, you're machmir. He says, I'm Makel, he says, it's between me and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Someone's Nichshal and Isser, that's on me, but that's between me and Hashem. Averis ben Odin Lamakom, Yom Kippur is Mechaper. He says, you're Machmer on someone, you cause them loss of money, you cause Shalom Bayis problems, you cause them stress, etc. That's ben Odin Lachavera. Yom Kippur doesn't help for that. So he says, Yom Kippur will help me, it's not going to help you, my friend. So that's an interesting perspective, by the way, and I think it's important for it. Yeah.
It's also Iran.
Sorry?
Giving harsh rebuke.
Yeah, he didn't read my sefer. Anyway, but on the other hand, it was a response, and there is actually there is evidence that a good line could be considered an honest like a good response, you know what I mean? It's like beyond, you know, I can't really control it. Right? Okay, so no, there's actually a Trubus Maharit. There was a guy in Salonika, a Sephardi, actually a Spanish Jew who actually had was put on the tax rolls of the Romaniot congregation. So he said, you've given over, he quoted a pasuk, I forgot the pasuk, he says, you've given over Bnei Yehuda to the Bnei Yavon, to the children of Yavon. So the Romaniot Jews, who are from Greece, they objected to his calling them Yavonim, and they wanted him to be put in Cherem. So one of the Maharit's defense of these people was that, he was joking. It's a joke, like, take it, chill, you know. Like. So he brings Uriah, there was a case of the Mari Abuhab, who lost an eye because, I think, of an interrogation in the Inquisition, and he's walking with three Talmidim, and they stop at a large rock on the side of the road. They all sit down on the rock to rest. And he says, Talmidim, someone have a Dvar Torah to say. So one of the Talmidim says, yes, if I may be permitted, right, Niskayem Banu Aposik B'Zacharia. The Posik in Zacharia, V'haya Alev Enachas Shiva Einayim, has been fulfilled. Right, so he was a little upset. He said, if it was not in a good mood, I'd put you in Cherem. So anyway, all right, so that's leaving that aside. So now, another and obviously major aspect of the Chiyuv of Kiruv Rechoikim, and actually the term Kiruv is actually used in this Makor, is Pasuk, which we say, Ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha. Very famously, the Rambam is saying for a mitzvah Asay Gimel. How do you fulfill the mitzvah of Ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha? Love Hashem. So, he quotes in the Sifrei, right, which is Ahavehu al Habriyos. Make Hashem beloved to others. That's how you fulfill the mitzvah of Ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha. Make him beloved to others. And there, the Rambam in his beautiful Loshen, it's not his Loshen, it's a translation, but anyway. Right, Zek, Shitoyav Adam, Tasim Libcha Alav, Teshabcheyu, Tubakesh, Anashim, Lehobo Yisoy. You will seek other people to also love Hashem because you love Hashem. And he says that, Beloy Safik, Tidroish, Vitikra, Koifrim, Vasichlim, Lidiasa, Emes, Ashayadata at Oisa. If you know this truth, you will certainly call to other people who are foolish or ignorant and call them to this truth. And he says that's why Avraham was called Avraham Oyavi, that he loved Hashem. There's a, if you look in the introduction of the Trubas Chasen Sofer in Yoredeya, it's called Pituchei Choisam. There, the Chasen Sofer, who you, I don't know if you'd expect this from, I mean, but the Chasen Sofer is the one who, he says that the reason, even though Chanoch, right, was apparently on a higher level of Ruchnias than Avraham, because Chanoch didn't even die. It just says, Chanoch Einenu, Kilaka Choisam, he was no more. Hashem took him. So the Mekubalim say that he was on such a high level of Ruchnias, the Arba Yesoidus of Ruach Eshmaim offer couldn't hold together. So he just like, that's it. Just, you know, transcended. So that's a very high level of Ruchnias. And yet, the Chasen Sofer points out, Chanoch did not get the title Chanoch Ohavi, my beloved. Only Avraham got it. And Avraham, it says he died. So here is Avraham on a low level of Ruchnias, who's called Avraham Oyavi, and yet Chanoch on the lower, on the higher level of Ruchnias is not called Oyavi. Why is that so? Chasen Sofer says very simple. How did he achieve this high level of Ruchnias? He isolated himself from people. He meditated on a mountaintop. He went into a cave and he became a malach. He said, Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't want more malachim. He's got plenty. Right? What he wants is human beings. And Avraham Avinu went out and mixed with the people and was and yes, he sacrificed from his own level of Ruchnias, but he was able to bring people close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hence, he merited the title Avraham Ohavi, my beloved, because he was Mekayem, this mitzvah of Ve'ahavta, es Hashem Elokecha. Another source, which is which is brought by the Maramshiv and the Minchas Chinuch, is fairly famous also, is the is obviously two things. It's Hashavas Aveda, and Lo Yisamer Al Dam Re'echa. So as you probably know from the Gemara and Sanhedrin, right, that that Hashavoy Saloy includes not only Hashavas Aveda, right, of his money, but Hashavas Aveda the Gufoy. Right, obviously, meaning you can restore the use of something, not meaning he lost his body, although I had someone who actually asked me, I was at a Gateway seminar, this guy came over to actually ask me, he says, I gave a shiur about washing hands and its symbolism and stuff, he says, if you've had astral travel and you come back, or an out-of-body experience, do you have to wash? I've never been asked that. I'm a little scared to ask Rav Schechter. But do you have to wash? Anyway, so when we talk about Hashavas Aveda Dgufa, loss of body, it doesn't mean that you got lost while you were during astral travel or something. What it means is, person lost the use of a limb or lost their health, restoring that to them is, how do we know that you're mechuyif to do that? It's a kal v'chomer. If I'm obligated to restore something as unimportant as their money, how much more so am I obligated to restore their body? So we could take that one step further, kal v'chomer ben benot, shel kal v'chomer, and we could say, if you're obligated to hashavas aveda de gufoi, kal v'chomer hashavas aveda de nafsho, right? And the neshama, right? I mean, if they lost their spiritual heritage, I mean, l'chaira, I have a chiyuv, this is my ramshik, Michas Chinuch, and others say, how much more so do I have an obligation to restore it to them? We have time. Good. Just to go through very quickly. Shinamtan levanecha, right? Chiyuv Talmud Torah, right? As the Rambam says, Chiyuv Talmud Torah is to. It's interesting how he starts Hilchas Talmud Torah. I don't know if you've noticed that. But he starts Hilchas Talmud Torah by saying the people who are potter. He then says, you're mechuyev to teach your grandchildren, your children. Then your grandchildren. And then he says, why? And he says, then he says, you're mechuyev to teach everyone. And then he says, why does it say grandchildren or children over any, if you're mechuyev to teach everyone? Because there's a kedima, there's a priority to your children, grandchildren over other people. Then, I think it's halacha ches, I think it's not by until halacha ches, then he says, if your father didn't teach you, you're mechuyev to teach yourself. That's a little bit, isn't that a little bit strange? If I was writing Hilchos Talmud Torah, I would start with, you have to learn Torah. And you have to teach it to your kids. And you have to teach it to your grandchildren. And you have to teach it to everyone. And these are the people who are potter. Instead, the Rambam is like a total reverse. It's counterintuitive. Right? You hear the question? And it's like, it doesn't even mention you have to learn Torah yourself until, like, I'm pretty sure it's halacha ches, something like that. And that's after, because, oh, if your father didn't teach you, so you have to, what? So Ramos Shapiro says, the pshat is, because the Rambam holds that the Ikar Mitzvah's Talmud Torah, and this is why, by the way, he holds that there's one mitzvah of learning Torah, teaching Torah, etc., as opposed to, I think, the smug who says, three mitzvahs. Learning Torah, teaching your children, teaching Talmidim. The Rambam holds one mitzvah, which is Har Sinai, take it, move it forward. If that's the mitzvah, then the best fulfillment of that is what? Teaching your children, teaching your grandchildren, right? And teaching everyone. And if that didn't work, because someone in the chain messed up, so now you can teach yourself, you should teach yourself as well. But the Ikar Mitzvah is the transference of Har Sinai content, experience, etc., further on in the generations, which also explains why the Ramban's Hasaga on the Rambam, where the Ramban says one of the mitzvahs asay sheshachach oisam harav, right? In the list of mitzvahs, the Rambam forgot, as the Ramban puts it, right? One of the mitzvahs is that hodatim levanecha levnei vanecha yom hashem aratzav tachem hashem akech b'chayrev. You shall inform your children and your children's children the day you stood in front of Hashem on Har Sinai. So the Ramban says, the Rambam doesn't list that as a mitzvah. It's explicitly a mitzvah. And it says loy, right? I think it says also as a loy sase as well. Pen yasuru milvavcha. Pen is also a loy sase. So we have here an assay, teach about Har Sinai, and a loy sase, don't forget it. So the Ramban says, the Rambam left it out. But I think, right, the Rambam includes that in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, because as far as the Rambam is concerned, what is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? Take Har Sinai, move it forward. Move it on. Right, and that's really what we're doing here, and that includes, therefore, not only your children and your children's children, but also everyone, etc. Oror asher lo yakim es divrei haTorah hazois in Dvarim Chav Zayin. So the Ramban there on the pasuk says that he brings the Yerushalmi that a it refers to a person who does a lousy hadba. Right, asher lo yakim es haTorah hazois, it's an argument for steroid use. Right, but basically. Also, the Magen Avraham actually brings that Ramban in Hilchos Sefer Torah and Hagba, right? That Asher Lo Yakim, you have to do it properly, right? Etc. Right? First, the Gabbai should not look at a person and say, "Okay, you." And it's like do descriptions, but okay, right? So, but anyway, there's also another, the Gemara Yerushalmi that the Ramban quotes also says that it refers to someone who does not support people in their Torah. And what does that mean? So the Shari Tshuva, Shar Gimel, he says what that means is that you have a chiyuv to encourage people, right, to do Torah and mitzvahs. In other words, yakim es haTorah doesn't mean to me, if it meant ara asher lo yakim, cursed is he who does not fulfill the Torah, it would be ara asher lo yekayem. That would be fulfill. Yakim does not mean to fulfill. Yakim means to raise up, to hold it up. Right? In other words, to cause, it's really like causing it. Yakim is to cause someone else to keep it. That's how the Shari Tshuva understands it. In addition, of course, we know there's Arvus, V'choslu Ishba Achiv, Ishba Oven Achiv, and it's interesting to see that the Rekanati and his Perush on the Chumash, right? He says, you're an Orev. You're an Orev for everything that for all other Jews. He says, in an Orev, Gemara says, Rotsom is their goiva, Rotsom is their goiva. Right? The creditor can collect from whoever he wants. So he says, that's how he puts it, right? Lochiach achoite, he says the mitzvah, a lot of Rishonim say, the mitzvah of Hocheach Tachiach is based on Arvus. Right? Hocheach Tachiach is Amisech, but Losisa alachet would might be translated as, you should have to be Mochiach, don't bear sin because of him. In other words, therefore the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch, he actually says there's two components to the mitzvah. Component number one is be mochiach to prevent the other person from doing the Aveira. But he says there's another aspect of Toichacha, which is macho'o. Macho'o means to object to something which is wrong, not because I know that he's going to change, but because I need to, so to speak, be moitzi, right? In other words, if I'm not objecting, then I'm part of it. So sometimes protest, there's very interesting, if you look in Tchumim, I forgot what volume, but in Tchumim there's a fascinating debate between the two chief rabbis of Petach Tikva. Petach Tikva was started as a frum town many, many years ago, in the early 20th century. And in the 70s, I think it was, or maybe 80s, for the first time ever, a movie theater opened on Shabbos. And there was a huge debate that Ashkenazi chief rabbi Petach Tikva led protests against it, and the Sephardi chief rabbi felt that it was not correct because you were causing more Chilul Shabbos through the protests. And there's a very interesting debate between the two about the whole idea of toichacha versus macho'a, right? Now, there's objection to something versus rebuke. Rebuke is about the other person. Macho'a is primarily about me. You understand the distinction. And it's very fascinating. Yeah, it's just interesting articles to look at between two. I think the Ashkenazi chief rabbi even got arrested or something. Anyway, but whatever. So that's the difference. When you be machiach someone, it has to come. And actually, I heard from Rav Moshe that why does it say lo sisna sechicha bil vavecha? In the same posuk, it says right afterwards hocheach tachiach. If the hocheach tachiach comes from a feeling of hatred, because he's such a low life, he's doing this, it's not going to work. If it comes from love, lo sisna, but it comes from love, then it's going to be effective. I always tell the story. I got into a taxi in Yerushalayim. I was in yeshiva in Unsdorf. It's one of the seven dwarfs, right near Battersea. Right? So I got into a taxi. Taxi driver, who apparently was not from me, didn't have a yarmulke. Not that necessarily proves someone's not from. So in Israel, certainly people can be shomer shabbos and kashrus and still not wear a yarmulke. But okay. But he's a taxi driver, and he says, we're right outside the yeshiva, and he says, "Talomed po, you learn here." I said, "Ken, yeah." He says, "Ezo shiur, who's shir?" So, you know, I've been in Israel long enough to be obnoxious. And I said, Tamakir Tashirima. Right? Like, you know who's Shir? Like, what's it? Like, you know. He says, Tagir. You know, tell me who's Shir. I said, Besed. So, you know, like, so I said, you know, Rav Shapira. He says, Rav Moshe Shapira? I said, Ken. He says, because of him, I keep Shabbat because of him. I said, Tagir Liyad. Right? So he said, I say, yeah, tell me. So he says, okay, he says, I live in the same building as he does in Beit Vegan. Right. He says, when he first moved into the building, it was a rainy day. I see a guy, he looks very respectful, it was like in the first few weeks, but I saw he was an important Rav, and I see that he came out late from his building, from his apartment, and it was raining, and I was just about getting into the taxi then. I said, you know, I'll give you a ride. I offered, I said, I'll give you a ride free, chinam. I'll give you a ride to wherever you need to go, Rav. So he said, thank you very much. We get into the taxi, same time. I take out, the taxi driver told me this, is I take out the key, I put it in the ignition. Rav Moshe puts his hand on mine. And Rav Moshe says to me, Atalon osa Shabbat, Ken. You don't drive on Shabbat, do you? So the taxi driver said to me, he says, I did. I looked at him and I couldn't say yes. I looked into his eyes. I felt it would just hurt. I couldn't bring myself to say, yeah, I drive on Shabbat. He says, on the other hand, I'm not a liar. I couldn't say no. So it's raining outside. His hand's on my hand. The key's in the ignition. I can't say yes. I can't say no. I said, makara. Like, what happened? He says, nishbati. He says, I took a shvua in my mind that I would never again drive on Shabbat. And I said to him, ani lo noseh. I don't drive on Shabbat. He says, from then on, I never drove on Shabbat. Amazing, right? Unbelievable, right? So I wouldn't try this personally. End up with a key in your nostril or something, right? You've got to have, if the taxi driver feels a sense of, he feels love, he feels a sense of concern, he doesn't feel under attack. I guess he felt that he couldn't hurt him or disappoint him by saying that he drove. You know what I mean? So, but he's not a liar. So, you know, classic Israeli. And he lost shakrat. So he said, like, what did he do? Fine. So I took a note. I'm not going to drive, and he didn't drive. Amazing, fantastic. So that's a hocheach tochiach. Okay. So that's arvus. We were talking about arvus. Many of the mafarshim understand. Quite a few rishonim and achronim understand that the chiyuv of hocheach tochiach comes from arvus. From the fact that I'm an arev. I'm responsible one for the other. I've got to tell this another story from Eretz Yisrael, which is it's just such an Eretz Yisrael. I was in, we got engaged, and my wife found an apartment in Kiryat Moshe for $200 a month, and this is many years ago, late medieval, right? So it's $200 a month. The government had a program for Olim that they give you they gave us $175 a month towards the rent. Right, as a loan. But if we'd stay in Israel more than 5 years, it would become a grant. So we paid $25 a month for the apartment in Kiryat Moshe, around the corner from Merkaz Arab. It was like unbelievable. Right. So, however, you needed four arevim. You needed four guarantors of Israeli citizens above a certain age, above a certain income. So to find this was not easy. I found four guarantors. I come to the bank, Bank HaPoalim, Binyan Klal, and Rehov Yafo. It's like this empty building with a bank and a bike store, right? Basically, those who've been there, right? So we're sitting there at the bank, and the clerk, she's the pekida, she says, where's your fifth arev? I said, what five? I said, the aliyashali. I said, we needed four. She said, efo ha aliyashali? Efo ashliya? I said, Melbourne. Australia. She gives me an evil smile. She says, I say you need five. I've got the stamp. So I said, we need to sign the lease this afternoon. We need to show the balabite, the owner. We need to show her that we have the money, right? She says, bayashocha, your problem. So it was unbelievable. I started crying, or I started yelling at her. It was the other way around, I don't remember. But anyway, so a guy walks by, never met the guy. Guy with kippah walks by. He sees a little bit of a something going on, and he walks over. I've never met this guy ever, right? And he comes over and he says, "Ma baya." So I said, "Explain to him, Maista." I said, "We need a fifth guarantor for this loan." He says, "Ani achtom. I'll sign. I'll be your fifth." He says, "I have an account here at the bank. I'll sign." I said, "I don't even know you." He says, "Ma, kol Yisrael arevim zebazeh, sheyeh bichtav." He said, "Every Jew is anywhere responsible. Let it be in writing. What do I care?" And he actually signed. Right, that is, that's amazing, right? So that should be really our attitude. Kol Yisrael Arevim, and we know the halacha, right? For example, Kiddush, right? You can make, right? Birchas HaMitzvahs, Afa B'Shiyatza, Moitzi. Birchas HaMitzvahs, even though I was already Yotze, I could be Moitzi. I actually had the situation, I was hosting, our family were at the Or Sameach apartment in Arzal Bira, guest apartment, we were hosting people, guys from Or Sameach, new guys, and then Jeff Seidel, after I make Kiddush, Jeff Seidel brings in like five people from the cartel, right? So yeah, half an hour late. I said, Jeff, yeah. So I have to make Kiddush again. So I make Kiddush a second time for these people. So one of my kids asked me, it's a brachal of Atot. He says, how can you say Kiddush? We already were Yotzi. You said Kiddush. I said, no. What's the logic? So again, the Ritva says, and the Mishnah Berurah quotes this, right? He says, because Kol Yisrael kuguf echad, all the Jewish people are like one body. And he says, I cannot say I was Yotzer. Why? Because part of me, these other Jews that Jeff Seidel brought in, were not Yotzer yet. So therefore, I was not Yotzer. Because the I is a little larger than just this body here, right? It includes those people, and therefore I wasn't Yotzer. I can say the bracha again. So that's another part of the chiyuv. Biarta harat mepkir becha, the Madrega Sa'odom, talks about this, the Shari Tshuva talks about this. Biata Ramakir Becha means the way we remove the evil from our midst is by hopefully turning the evil to good, as in the famous case of Bruria and Rav Meir, right? Don't daven they should die, right? But daven they should do tshuva. That's a question how they could do that, but okay. Another one is Mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. If you look at the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvahs, Mitzvahs Asei Tes, right, when he talks about Kiddush Hashem, how does he describe the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem? Lefarsem es ha'emuna hazois ha'amitis ba'olam, to publicize our faith in the world. Kiddush Hashem. And actually the Shari Tshuva says, if you've done an Aveira, he says the best way of doing Tshuva is to do Kiddush Hashem. Because it's l'hamid es ha'emes mul ha'sheker. And so that would be a further obligation in terms of Kiruv. Okay. So having done some of the obligations, just a few words about, first of all, the status of the average non-frum Jew. So we know the average non-frum Jew is probably does not keep Shabbos, except for last week, right? So generally is Mechal Shabbos Farhesia. The Gemara in Chulin says, and in Erevin, Mechal Shabbos Farhesia is a mummer, right? So is a mummer. And what does it mean? An apostate. And Rashi, there on the Gemara in Chulin, so Rashi says, why is he a mummer? Because he's it's actually, Gemara says, even more than that, the Gemara in Chulin says that he's ka'oived avodah zarah. Right? So Rashi says, why? Because ha'oived avodah zarah koifer ba'kodesh baruch hu, ha'mechal al Shabbos is koifer b'masav. So you're denying Hashem's, I guess, his creation, his relationship with the world, etc. So therefore, it's quite serious. And so, obviously, if the person's got a din of a mumar, that has many, many ramifications. However, as I'm sure you're all aware, there are many details or conditions here which act towards to his benefit. Number one, it's obviously only if he's mazid. Bir Halacha mentions that in Shin Pehei. If he's not mazid, if he's a shoygeg, you can't consider him a koyfer, a machal shal fehesi, a mumer. He's a shoygeg. And what is the level of shoygeg? So we have the Chazon Ish, who was extremely liberal in this area, right? And the Chazon Ish comes along and says, in Yoredei, I think it's in the first siman, Chazon Ish comes along and says, you know what? We paskin, hezid belav, the shogag bekores, is called a shoygeg. Brings a korban chatas. You know what that means? It means he knows it's an iser lav de oraisa. It's just he's not sure what the oinesh is. He didn't know it was Mrs. Basting, thought it was Kares, or maybe he thought it was this. So that's a shoygeg. Seriously, how many non-religious Jews are mezidin? I mean, they knowing the full consequences of the action, knowing the level of its prohibition. I mean, first of all, the term deraisa derabbanan, the whole idea, you need to give a whole series of shiurim just so they should understand what's deraisa, what's derabbanan. Followed by, right, Kores, followed by, I mean, there's a shoygig in, first of all, yeah.
And a lot of people do know that there's an Isra Skina,
I don't know how many people know that. I mean, I know that some people who, there are people who do definitely know that, but I'm not sure how many of the average people that I've encountered don't know that. They're just not aware. Right, but admittedly, that would not be the shogeg of the Chazon Ish, right? So agreed there. But I don't know in reality how many people really do know that. Yeah.
Because someone raised this topic, but generally, given that you have a lot of experience in this field, do you think there are common mistakes that religious Jews do make, let's say when it comes to Shabbat or other things, in dealing with Jews who aren't religious, and things to avoid and things to look out for?
Definitely. There's a whole, if we have time for it, I have a misconceptions and mistakes. I think we do have, but certainly regarding something like this, in this particular area, I think we have to be very careful not to confuse what is halacha with what is what we do. From Jews do X, Y, and Z. Not necessarily, you have to be careful about what you're telling someone. And sometimes, our education system, sometimes, in terms of the Doraisa and Rabbanon, etc., apropos of what, just getting back to the actual stuff, but is that sometimes if you give person the impression, and I know people who used to be frum and are no longer frum, one of them told me, he says, when I grew up, he says, I was under the impression that wearing a shtreimel is on the same level as keeping Shabbos. Right? And when I didn't want to wear it, as far as my family and society and I was concerned, that was the equivalent. I'm not frum anymore. I'm not keeping Shabbos. Right? And he says, so unfortunately, that's tragic, right? Because you don't have your priorities straight, right? You have to tell them, look, it's a minhag of some people. It's a minhag of some chassidim, not all, to wear this type of hat on Shabbos and special occasions. But that's not the same as Chilul Shabbos, right? So that's the important. When you explain or you're teaching halacha or you're teaching Jewish practice, very important to put things in correct perspective and proportion. What is minhag? What is halacha? What is a chum? That's very important. That misinformation is really a crucial factor, I think. Not crucial, that would be an incorrect word, but I think it's a major factor in causing people to have problems with Yiddishkeit. So another condition also, notice the Gemara said befarhesia. As if you look at the Pachad Yitzchak in Shabbos, not the Pachad Yitzchak Halachic Encyclopedia, but Rav Yitzchak Huttner, Pachad Yitzchak, on Shabbos, he actually points out that it's specifically doing it in the presence of an Eidah, because an Eidah is from Loshon Eid. So an Eidah of Jews who keep Shabbos is like a testimony to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Bria of the world. So the person's Mechal Shabbos Befarhesia in the presence of an Eidah who are testifying the opposite, that is really the chutzpah, so to speak. That's the kfira, right? Kfira against the taina, so to speak. We're making it, by our existence and keeping Shabbos, making a taina. So for that reason also, possibly the Gemara anyway says that it's only as Befarhesia. What's Farhesia? So interesting, the Gemara in Erevin actually, Samachtes, says that if the person would not do this in front of a great rabbi, that's not Farhesia. No, if they do it in public, but they wouldn't, but if Ravadja Zatzal would have walked by, the person would have swallowed the cigarette. There was actually a case like that with the Rari Levine. He was visiting the prison, the British prison, and there was a guy who was smoking, and someone said, right, Harav Magia, their respect for Rav Aryeh Levine was so profound and great, the guy actually swallowed the cigarette. Like, it was like, I've never smoked and I never swallowed a cigarette, but I'm guessing that it's not great, right? And so even though the guy was smoking in public, which is actually Chilul Shabbos Befarhesia, but according to the Gemara in Erevin, if he was not prepared to do it in the presence of Rav Aryeh Levine, he doesn't have the degree of chatzifus, the degree of audaciousness, the degree of mazid that makes him really a mumar. So that's a very important stuff to keep in mind, that we have to be careful about classifying someone in that way. The one area where poiskim, and poiskim tend to be makel about classifying someone that way, except for one area, wine. We tend to be a little more machmir. Tzitz Eliezer has a lengthy tshuva about this, and he points out that it seems to him that the minhag of the poiskim is that in other areas of halacha regarding nafka minas of a mumar and a non-mumar, we tend to be more makel, but when it comes to stam yenam, to the wine, we're a little more machmir. There may be Kabbalistic reasons for that, I do not know. But we tend to be machmir, and we try to have, yayin levushel or pasteurized, if you hold like Ramosha, but either way, wine, which is not going to be an issue. Okay, I'm not exactly sure. I think it might be reasons I'll pick Kabbalah that they're machmir on it, but poiskim tend to be machmir at least on that. And again, other types of mumrim, there's not that many people that we'll encounter who are, you might call a mumr la avodah zara, where there's a whole issue, can he do tshuva, how does he do, can we accept him, can we not accept him, etc. It's very rare. There's one case in poiskim which is fascinating, as a noi to be Yehuda, about a kohen in London, who fell in love with a Hindu woman. and got married to her. This is not contemporary. This is Notibi Huda, right? So he falls in love with this Indian woman in London, and they get married in a Hindu ceremony. So Notibi Huda, and then eventually the guy did tshuva, divorced his wife, and wants to become frum again. But he's a Kohen. So he asked, can I duchen? Kohen she'ovar avodah zara, Kohen she'harag es ha'nefesh, right? So we know, Kohen she'harag, if he killed someone or if he was over avodah zara, can't do avodah. So what's the halacha here? Did he do avodah? So the Notibi Huda, you can see he's really trying to help this guy out. But he says, Notibi Huda says, first of all, he says, I'm not so sure if you did avodah zara. Avodah zara requires being mekabel something as a god. He says, you did this for the love of a woman. He says, were you committed to Hinduism? Or you just did the ceremony, you want this woman, he's in love with this woman. So people do lots of weird things for love, right? So he did this, he did the ceremony, not necessarily was he mekabel it as a god, not necessarily did he actually believe in it, and therefore it's certainly osur to do it, but does it make him an oved avodah zara? He says no. And he says also tshuva helps regarding this. Tshuva helps. So, but again, we don't run into that much in terms of oivdei, genuine oivdei avodah zara. You do have it occasionally, but usually it's not something we encounter. Thank God. The whole issue also of tinok shenishba. What is the definition? We, of course, have the Rambam in Hilchas Mamrim, who famously says that the children, the grandchildren, the students of the karoim, we have to treat them. I mean, there is a girsa that says don't kill them too quickly, but the general girsa we have is you have to be makar of them, you have to bring them close, you have to look at them with love because they're not considered to be mazidim. They're not really mumrim. They were educated that way. Very famously, the Rambam in Perek Gimel Hilchos Teshuva seems to contradict that, where he says that a person who believes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a goof, who believes that Hashem is corporeal, such a person is a mumar, a min, actually a min. And the Ravid there says, why do you call him a min? There are good and great people from amongst us who believe this because they take the Torah literally, or because they take midrashim, which are very confusing, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu nis'atev k'shliach tzibor, HaKadosh Baruch Hu maniach tefillin, you know, kesher shel tefillin, hera la'onav, etc. Right? I mean, they take these things literally. They claim they're a poshut yid, right? And what is Rabbi Chanan Wasserman quotes Rabbi Chaim Briska as saying what the Rambam holds is nebuch apikoros is oichet an apikoros, a pitiful apikoros is indeed an apikoros. Yes, we have to cry for him. It's terrible. He had a lousy education. He was etc. But in the end, he lacks emuna. If so, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman asks in Kogis Mamorim, he asks, if according to the Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, there appears to be no such thing as shogeg when it comes to emunah, either you got it or you don't, right? And even if the reason was something, which is his education, so how can the Rambam now say regarding the children and students of the Karoim who don't believe in Torah Shebaal Peh, why does he call them tinoika shenishbu as opposed to mumrim? You hear the question? So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman's basic answer, the way I understand it, and I'm sure there's other understandings, probably wrong. But anyway, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, the way I understand it is this. He says that if you can trace the source of error to something external, even the Rambam would agree that he's a tinok shenishba. In the case of the Karoim, he went to a Karite cheder and a Karite masivta and a Karite yeshiva gedola. And he spent his whole life with people who look very pious, right, with magnificent beards, right, etc., etc., and they're telling him that this is the Torah Shavikta, right? There's no such thing as Torah Shavikta. That's it. So, could you tell me it's because he's corrupt, perverse, or it's because I can trace it to something outside himself. But when it comes to a belief that Hashem has got a body, and the person says, oh, because I take the Torah literally, the Rambam would say that this person has no excuse. Why? If he read the translation of Onkelos, or Yonis and Menuziel, he'd immediately pick up the hint that we shouldn't understand it literally. If he'd rely on the sages, and there's extensive works about this, he'd understand HaTorah Medaberes B'Loshon Bnei Adam. And if he'll tell me, yes, but I'm a simple Jew, I take it literally, I'll say, really? Did you take the posuk Umaltem Es Or Las Levavchem literally? What? You're a postulant yid? You take it literally. So the Torah says, circumcise the foreskin of your heart. Give me the knife. Right? So there we can trace the mistake to internal causes, his own perverse understanding, his claim that he's simple, which is belied by the fact that he doesn't always take things literally, right? And versus the Karaites, whose education was that which led them astray through no fault of their own. And I think we can probably apply this idea to many, many Jews today who have given an education. And of course, the whole idea of Tinshin Shra sometimes is expanded greatly. I remember asking Rav Scheinberg, Oliver Sholem, I was dealing with a guy at Or Samaya who had gone to yeshivas his whole life. And I forgot the issue that came up, and I asked Rav Scheinberg, so what I was talking about, I was asking Rav Scheinberg, I said, you know, is this guy a Tinik Shanishba? I mean, he went to 12 years of Jewish day school education. So Rav Scheinberg gives me a look like I'm such an idiot. Right? He says, of course he's a Tinik Shanishba. He says, which yeshivas the guy had said? He says, definitely a Tinik Shanishba. I don't know, I don't want to tell you, but evidently he understood that sometimes, you know, it's not always a person's fault. There's the faulty education system, right, can sometimes be a reason. Of course, the Chazon Ish, in one of the most famous pieces, he says, in Yoredei Siman Aleph Sifkot Vav, he says that that we have to look at a person, and this is, by the way, this is based on the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim is actually based on even earlier sources, the Maram Lublin. There's a book, Marganisa Tava, at the end of Chafetz Chaim Avos Chesed. He quotes there Maram, who says that a person's only considered a Rosha if they had Toichocha and rejected it. If they heard it and they rejected it. But he says if they never heard Toichocha, they never had Toichocha, then you can't really look at them as a Rosha, because maybe if they'd hear the right words, who knows? But then, that's very nice. But then he adds something extremely important. Chafetz Chaim, he adds that nowadays we don't really know how to do Toichocha properly. Which means, the Chazon Ish says, can you ever say, he says, you can sometimes say that a person has had, but he says really a Rav or a Beis Din has to look at it and say, you know what, so much Ishtavlus has been done with this guy, we say, yes, he's had Toichocha. But to come along and say to a person, what do you mean, he came to my Shir and he's not trying to show us? Must be a Rosha, right? That would be the height of arrogance, right? The presumption to say, well, I am able to give to, I don't really know how to give to, if I knew how to give to a chocha, I'd be a different story. But we don't really know how to do it properly, right? We don't have the love light beaming from our eyes, as the Beatles would say. We don't have that, and so therefore it may not be an effective tochacha, and so consequently it's hard to consider this person a Rosha in any sense. We generally look at him as a Tinok Shanishba. Okay. Moving along, because we have running out of time. Just a point which I was discussing with one of my kids, like the right pikuach nefesh. So we know the Gemara says ein oimrim loy laadam chate bishvishiyuske chavercha. Right, we don't say to a person sin, so your friend can have merit. Right, Gemara Pesachim. Right, so it's interesting when it comes to saving someone's life on Shabbos, Chilul Shabbos. If the person was complete idiot, negligent fool, you know, did something like straight out of the Darwin Awards, okay, are you still allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos to save their life? Of course, we don't make Pikuach Nefesh Doicha Shabbos, even if the person was a complete idiot, it was his own fault. He got himself into it. Right, and not only that, but the whole din of pikuach nefesh on Shabbos is even if the person won't do tshuva. Right, we know. Right, even though, right, that even if the person will be unconscious, right, he's under a building, chas v'shalom, right, mefakhim alav hazagal, you're allowed to uncover the building, even if he'll be unconscious, even though, right, as the was the Meiri, I think it says that maybe he'll wake up and do tshuva in an instant. But the Biur Halacha says that's only l'saber esa'oizen. That's only to make it easier to hear. He says, but the fact remains, even if we know he won't recover consciousness, he won't do tshuva, life is doiche Shabbos. Period. But we don't seem to have the same level of leniency when it comes to averus. Right? The Gemara Shabbos Dalad. Ain't oimrim la'adam chateh. What if I'm saving him from a huge? Can I be mechalel Shabbos and save someone from an avera? So that appears to be, you know, a little more complex. So, you know, the Shulchan Aruch actually says, for instance, in Shin Chav Ches, Mishiroitzim lo'onsoi shi'avar avera gedoyla e'mechal n'afshav eskelel silo. Someone who is in danger of being forced into a serious avera, you're not mechal Shabbos to save him. However, we have another Gemara. Not a Gemara. It's actually based on a Tshuvas HaRashba.
The first one was
Shabbat Abdallah, he said, right? Yeah, it's Einon Right, but the Shulchan Aruch Pasuk is in Shin Vav, that a case of a man whose daughter was being taken, I believe it was by, I'm not sure if it was Muslims or Christians, the Rashba, I don't know. Okay. So his daughter was being captured by Gentiles. He heard that his daughter had been kidnapped by Gentiles. And in those days, in that situation, what that would mean is that they'd take her and keep her and she'd be raised as a non-Jew. So is he allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to save her? Shulchan Aruch says yes. Why? Because A, Chilul Shabbos compared to a lifetime of Chilul Shabbos, the one time Chilul Shabbos is considered to be a minor compared to a major. Also, it's not her fault. She's an honest. It was against her will. She was kidnapped. Right? And he didn't cause it. So what we see is we are a little more mach. You know, you can be Mechal Shabbos to save someone from a lifetime of, right, you know, to save him from the missionary. I mean, you know, you're not going to come up with situations like this, hopefully, right? But okay, there could be cases like that, so you can do it. But we're a little more machmir. We're not quite as makel regarding saving someone from a spiritual danger by being Mechal Shabbos as we are from a physical danger, right? You know, as we don't require all these tanoim. So what's the reason? There are a few reasons. One reason is that, as Rav Scheinberg said, He says, because your life, he says, you've been given free will. He says, your life doesn't belong to you. Right? So you have no right to commit suicide. You have no right to, he says, therefore we'll do anything to save the person's life, even if he's attempting suicide on Shabbos Chas V'Shalom, even if he's a complete idiot and has done something totally irresponsible. He says, but when it comes to the Navera, you have free will. So be Mechal Shabbos to save you from Navera, not necessarily. Aside from which, saving someone's life is a 0-1. Meaning, if I am not Mechal Shabbos, he will die. 0. If I am Mechal Shabbos, I can save his life. Clearly, I will save him. Right? I phone the ambulance, I get him out of the water, whatever. It's a 0-1. But he says, but on the other hand, he says, if you're Mechal Shabbos to save him from an Avera, does that mean, is that 0-1? You have no idea. Is he still capable of doing Averas? Oh, Mechal Shabbos, I save him from the Avera. So what? Doesn't mean he won't do Averas in the future. Right, it's not a vadei hatzala here. It's not so clear cut. So therefore, we are very careful about that. In other words, there's no such thing as saying, yeah, but it's for cure, so it should be okay. You know, I remember I was in Sydney doing a Shabbaton in Sydney, and there was a guy there. One of the guys, it was a local who was helping us out in the Shabbaton, and he was supposed to give a dvar Torah at lunch, which was at the shul. So we're staying at the same house. He says, listen, he said there was no eruv. Right, so he says to me, he says, Rabbi, he says, I left my notes are here. He says, I said, well, what can you do? You know, there's no Eruv. He says, yeah, but it's for Kiruv. Right, like, I'm sorry, right? Right, so he could take his notes to the, no, he cannot take his notes to the shore. Right, no question that certainly it's true that we might consider we certainly consider if someone's Yiddishkeit is on the line here, that's certainly a Shas Adchak. No, is that, you know what I mean? If we consider, you know, you can salt the meat for 18 minutes because there's guests coming and it's Erev Shabbos, and that's a Shas Adchak, so we're Makel, like those poiskim, I think someone's Yiddishkeit is a Shas Adchak, but there's no automatic heter that, oh, it's for Kirim, so I can take notes to Shul for the... No! Right, that we don't say. That's chate kadesh yiske chavercha. Ein oimrim ladan chate kadesh yiske chavercha. Unless certain circumstances, as we said, of a lifetime of averus. This leads us to lifnei iver lo tetein mishol. Lifnei iver lo tetein mishol comes up all the time. This past Shabbos, we had lots of issues like that. Right, everyone's inviting people for the Shabbos project. You know, people don't have a hood. Ronnie Greenwald told me this guy came to him and he said he doesn't understand Shabbos. He finds it. He read a book about it. So Rabbi Greenwald said, listen, he says, you've got to experience Shabbos to really understand it. The guy said, I don't know. I don't get this whole of the driving. Don't drive. Don't put on light. It's like weird. It's like, it doesn't sound like rest to me. So he comes for Shabbos. He sets him up for Shabbos. This guy had the best single malt whiskey. Unbelievable stuff Friday night. They go to a Shalom Zohar. There's more single malt. Right, there's beer. The next morning, Kiddush, there's some tequila shots. Right, Mincha, there's beer. Right, so the guy at the end of Shabbos says, he says, what do you think of Shabbos? The guy says, I think I understand the stuff about not driving, but the lights I'm still not sure about. It's like, yeah, like, yeah, it's not clear. Anyway, so of course, there's an old shayla about inviting someone for Shabbos if you know they're going to drive, and you probably are aware that the Igros Moshe was very much against this. He felt this was may not only be lifnei ivel or tetei mikshol, but this might even be an issue of meisis or meidiach or a chaim tzariches. It's again, it's in the PDFs. But he was very much against it. But not everyone agreed. Yibadol l'chaim tovim, Rav Moshe Sternbuch, who, by the way, although he's actually head of the Badatz in Yerushalayim today, he was one of the founders of the Kiruv movement in South Africa. He did a lot of Kiruv. He was the head of the Kollel in Joburg. And if you look in his Shailos and Tshuvos called Tshuvos van Hoggers, there's a huge amount of questions about Bali Tshuva and about Kiruv and stuff like that. It's very interesting to see, right? So in one of his Tshuvos, a couple who were from wanted to know if they could invite their parents to eat with them Friday night. Now, if you can avoid it, you'd not walk around at night in Johannesburg. Right? It's not safe. So if you have to, yeah, Friday night. So you walk, right? I was there in August. The hotel, had armed guards. The shul had armed guards. And there was, Baruch Hashem, was about a quarter of a mile from my hotel to the shul. So I'm okay. And there was a large crowd. But you don't want to walk around. So the parents are not going to walk, right? They don't want to stay at the house because they like their own bed. He knows if he invites them, they are going to drive. And but he says, his parents are not frum. He says he feels that if they would see Shabbos with the grandchildren, right, it would have a big impact on the Yiddishkeit. They'd see the beauty of Shabbos. They'd see how nice it is. Maybe it'll have an impact on them. So he wants to know, is it okay? So Rav Moshe Sternbuch said, yes, it is okay to invite them. Quite a chiddush. He says the following. He says, the Isser Lufnei Iver is only if your intention is to be machshel. If your intention is to be matakein, there's no issur. Type of like the issur of choivel, the chaveroi. Right? You're not allowed to wound someone. Let's say you're a physician. Is the reason a physician allowed to give someone a shot or cut them, is the reason because pikuach never? No. It's not, you don't need a dechia. The whole issur of choivel, the chaveroi, is only the Rambam ser derech nitsa umariva. It's only if you're doing it in a negative way. In other words, I come up to you and hurt you, if my intention is to hurt you, then there's an issur of chovel. If my intention is to cut away the infection, my intention is to give you a shot, right, to cure you, it's not like there's a dechia here, there's just no issur. Chovel is only when it's chavola, right? Destruction. So he says the same thing about lifnei avel v'tam yishol, which is a big chiddush. And he says that since your intention has been makara of them, he says you're allowed to invite them, but with two conditions. Three conditions. Condition number one, it cannot be purely social. So inviting people for a bar mitzvah, right, that's not really, no one's getting frumma with a bar mitzvah, not even the bar mitzvah boy, right? So it's not. So that's number one, right? Condition number two, he says, you should make it clear to them that you don't approve of the driving, you prefer if they didn't. In other words, it shouldn't be that you're acquiescing, but this is fine, you're okay, right? And number three, they shouldn't like park in the driveway. You know, like make it a chil Hashem out of it. You know, it's like be discreet about it. But basically, he does allow it. I mean, Ikranadin, he says it's okay. That you should make it clear to them that you'd prefer if they did. You know, you don't actually approve of driving on Shabbos. It's not something which we think is okay. Right? I know that Rav Furst in Chicago, right, he says if you invite someone to stay over and you have an actual possibility of them doing so, even if they come and decide to drive back, you've done your obligation. Right, so, yeah.
How far is that knowing that you don't approve of it? In other words, somebody who knows that Orthodox Jews don't drive on Shabbos, you don't have to go and in their face say, you know I don't approve of this, they know you don't approve of it.
I don't think so. I think it's a common sense type of thing. It has to be something where it's clear that I'm not, it's a good question, I'm not sure how far you have to go.
Is any, let's say, any Reform Jew that's being invited, any Orthodox Jews home, every Reform Jew, assumption, I think fair enough, that knows that every Orthodox Jew doesn't approve of driving, So you didn't have to spit it in their face? You're trying to be retiring.
Yeah, but you have to say, listen, I prefer if you didn't drive, and I'm happy to offer you, right? In other words, you say, like, you know, we don't drive. You could say something like, you know, we don't drive on Shabbos. They say, well, do you not mean not to come? I say, no, I'd like you to come. I just, you know, if you can stay over, that'd be great. But if not, I want you to come anyway. In other words, just there has to be some mention of this idea. Not all Reformed Jews know this, by the way. There's a Reformed temple, and I'm speaking to a Reformed temple in, I don't know, like next month. The lady, it's not far from Highland Park, New Jersey. Anyone familiar with the community of Highland Park, New Jersey? So she says to me, she says, I'd love to advertise this in Highland Park. She says, there's a large Hasidic community in Highland Park who will come. Is that a Hasidic?
Yeah.
You two live in Highland Park?
Yes, sir.
You're Hasidic. As far as she's concerned, you're Hasidic. Right? In other words, that's it. What she means is, a Jew with like a yarmulke walks out of the yarmulke and tzitzis, he must be Hasidic. The Hasidim. Right, so this idea of not driving may be something that the Hasidim don't do, or etc.
So she thought you were a Hasid?
She, it's a little embarrassing because she heard a class of mine on Shalom TV, and she said, I feel that you are. I was deeply insulted, but I nevertheless agreed because I want to be Makarim that you are liberal and open minded. Right? So I did not. I wasn't Moisha when she called me liberal. And, but never, you know, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know if she was, yeah.
Sorry, yeah. I've discussed sort of Shlomo Miller drawing. He's not supportive of that, but let me ask Rav Moshe. Would Rav Moshe be supportive of inviting?
No, definitely not. I would say Rav Moshe Feinstein was definitely.
Rav Moshe Shapiro.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good question. Never asked him. Usually, if I ask him a halachic shayla, he'll say, go to a local poisek. So I usually don't ask him halachic shaylas, and I do not know what he would say about that. I know that once I asked him about speaking at a Reformed temple, and he said, well, did you ask any of the poskim in the States? And I said, yes. He says, okay, but he does not approve of it, I should point out. Speaking at a Reformed temple or conservative.
Right.
Huh?
I'm sure about Moshe.
I'm sure he does. I just never asked him. Right. So,
give you a reason of why he would be opposed to selling CBN from Sinai?
He felt that it is giving chizuk to the movement, and it's a movement founded on a denial of Torah, and he felt that's wrong. I remember I spoke at a conservative shul. They had rap day. Nothing to do with not rapping, as in, you know, like, but Tfilin, it was like a, they called it rap day, right? And they asked me to speak about Tfilin Sunday morning. So it was the AJOP conference, which is the Associated Jewish Outreach Professional Conference, and Rav Moshe Shapiro was there speaking. So I spoke at this conservative show. I got late. I came to the conference late. I come in just as Rav Moshe, with a bunch of my friends, is walking out of his shir. Now, I didn't yet know Rav Moshe's view on this. So I came to Rav Moshe, oh, Shalom Aleichem, Rebbe. And he said, Shalom Aleichem, how are you? I said, great. And I said, I'm really sorry, I'm late. I was just speaking at a conservative shul. And my friends were like, oh. Right, his entire shir that he'd just given was on the issur of speaking at a conservative shul. Right. But he did not, he smiled, he hugged me, and it was fine. He didn't say a word. Right? And my friend said, you idiot. So anyway, but I did ask Poiskim here, and, you know, they said it was okay. So, and I asked Ramosha, I went over to Ramosha later, and I said, I heard that. And he says, yeah, but you asked the local. That's you know, I don't think he was happy, but, you know. Okay, so that's Lifnei. That's one Lifnei Ever Shaila. The other Lifnei Ever Shaila is a very famous one, dealt with by many poskim, is that, you know, the Gemara says you're not allowed to give food to someone if you know they didn't wash. And Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah derived from here, and this is mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, not to give food to someone if they're not going to make a bracha. Obviously, when you have someone at your house, you can say it very nicely, oh, we wash now and we say bracha, but, you know, sometimes they won't do it, sometimes they don't say a bracha, you know, not always easy, so, you know, especially if it's a Shabbaton, do you want to make an atmosphere at the Shabbaton where everyone has to do this, right? So some feel it's coercive, some feel it's like, you know, I remember at Or Samach, we asked Rosh Steinberg, do we have to insist on people wearing yarmulkes when they come into class? He said, no. You know, do you have to, right? You know, we give shir to people, you know, in all types of situations. So what about food? So there are various kulas that, for example, the Taz talks about Ein Safek Moisa B'Devadai. Maybe they'll say bracha, maybe they won't. The mitzvah of tzedakah is a definite Ein Safek Moisa B'Devadai. Of course, if you know for sure they won't say a bracha, That's not so simple, but there's a Yerushalma Zalman Orbach has a tshuva about this, and he says similar svara, not quite as extreme as Rishtenbuch, but Yerushalma Zalman Orbach said a svara that it's not a 0-1 type situation, that if I give him the food without a brocha, there's no aveira. If I insist on him making a brocha, there's no aveira, no negative. And if I give him food without him saying a bracha, it is a negative. He says, you know what? If you insist on him making a bracha when you give him the food, there's also a negative there. What's the negative there? Yeah. There's hatred, there's tension, there's coercion, there's unpleasantness. He says, I don't know. He says, it will be just like, yes, there's an Issur Rabbanon versus no Issur Rabbanon. Well, there it's obvious. He says, but here it's Issur Rabbanon versus Kinas Sinah V'Tachrus. Not at all sick, not at all clear that that's the situation. There's a tshuva about this in Mincha Shloima. And the Chazon Ish also seemed to be, has a svara similar to that, that in regarding why we give Dmai to Amei Haaretz, why Chazal were makel on giving Dmai to Amei Haaretz, right, to be Mefarnes Aniim. He says, why? He says, because the Safek, we don't want to be Machmer in a Safek when, by denying them this tzedakah, it's going to cause sin of Tachrus and so on and so forth. And hence he is lenient about that. A few more random topics. Teaching Kabbalah, right? It's not no lifnei iver, but I mean, you know, we know that there are certain conditions for the learning of Kabbalah. You know, male kreso bosa v'yayin, then you should do it, etc. But it's interesting. So we asked Rav. Just trying to find where I wrote it down. Right, yeah, so we asked a few people. One of the people we asked, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Hillel. So I'm sure you heard of Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Hillel. He's the Rosh Yeshiva of a yeshiva from Mukubalim in Eretz Yisrael. He's himself a major Mukubal. So I asked him about teaching, so what can you teach? He said, all the hakpodas, all the chumras, you have to be this age, you have to be married, you have to be this, you have to be that, are all only about learning the things in and of themselves. He says, svarim written for us, by Mekubalim, no restriction. Nefesh HaChaim, Ramchal, Tanya, right, not all the Ramchal, but the Nefesh HaChaim, the Ramchal, the Tanya, that type of stuff. He said, they're specifically written to avoid the issue. In other words, so we can teach people that. Right, is it the first thing you should teach people? No, but you never know. Some people are attracted by this type of limud. Teaching Torah to a non-Jew, right? We know from the Gemara, you know, sometimes you can't always, you know, in the first encounter, you're not going to now look into the person's genealogy. Not always possible. And sometimes a person may come with a non-Jewish friend or relative or spouse or et cetera, et cetera. So what are you going to do? So, you know, very famous Igros Moshe about a guy, Yeshiva Bocher, who came home. He had prepared, as you know, like Yeshiva, like a book longer than the Haggadah of Divrei Torah for the Seder, right? And he finds out that his non-Frum cousin is coming with his non-Jewish wife. So he asked Rav Moshe, can I say the Divrei Torah? There's a non-Jew present. So Rav Moshe said, of course. He says, you can say Divrei Torah to Jews. The fact that a non-Jew is listening doesn't make it osser. You're doing it for the Jews. Right? So he says, that doesn't prohibit you from saying Divrei Torah, the fact that there's a non-Jew there. What if you don't know the person? He says, generally, first of all, there are many. The Sridei Eish, Rabbi Chiya Yaakov Weinberg, held that the whole Isser is only if the non-Jew is doing it as a religious precept. If they're doing it out of curiosity, they want to hear about Judaism, curiosity, there's no Isser whatsoever. Some say the only Isser is in-depth Torah, but you can give them Tanakh. Tanakh is meant for everyone, not just for Jews. Yes, one or two more things. Distortion of Torah. Here is this is a bit of a stumbling block. A bit of a stumbling block that people have. That is to say, there's a Yamshul Shloima that talks about this. Yamshul Shloima in Bava Kamma. So the issue is this. am I allowed to, I'm not, you know, can you lie to save someone's life? Absolutely, right? We don't agree with Immanuel Kant. We would say you can lie to save someone's life. What about, can you lie about Torah? No. The answer to that is, very simply, I would have to say absolutely not. This is a Yom Shel Shloima and Baba Kama Siman Tes, Perek Dalet Siman Tes. Yeah, 1 second. Is this the? Oh no, sorry, that's not the. I'm quoting the wrong. Here it is. Yom Shel Shloima in Perek Revi. Yeah, it's the same one. Perek Revi Siman Tes. So the Gemara Bava Kama says that Caesar wanted to know about Judaism, so he sends two scholars to Israel. He says, "Teach them Torah. They'll come back and give me a report." So what do? They teach them Torah. They come back to Caesar, and Caesar's report is, "I like it. It's not bad. I don't like this stuff about Shor Shel Yisrael." Shanaga Shorshel Aknani, and vice versa. Not so right happy with that, right? Very famous. So they teach them Torah. So Tosfos asks, how could they teach them Torah? You know how to teach Torah to a non-Jew. So he says, the Tosfos answer that, look, if Caesar asks you, and you say, I prefer not to, that's pikuach nefesh, danger. Not, you can't, you have to listen, right? And it's not one of the mitzvahs, you have to die rather than transgress. So now, Tosfos says, why don't they just avoid telling him about that halacha? I mean, you have to tell him everything. You know what I mean? Introductory programs to Judaism do not include Mechia Samolik, Ir Hanidachas, and Soita. Right? I mean, those are not the first three subjects I'm going to do. Right? We may do Emunah, Shabbos, Kashrut. But, you know, so Tosfos says, because he probably asked them about stuff like that. No, Caesar was not an idiot. Some of them were. But this one wasn't. He probably asked them specifically about Jews and non-Jew interaction. Okay. So the Yom Shel Shloima asks, so why didn't they lie? Why didn't they lie? I mean, surely, if it's dangerous to tell Caesar, I don't want to learn Torah with you, so surely it's dangerous to tell Caesar that if we injure your ox, my ox injure yours, I don't have to pay, you injure me, you have to pay. I mean, that's not dangerous. Yom Shel Shloima says, we see from here that Ivus HaTorah, distortion of Torah, is osur, even when it's dangerous. They were prepared, that's tantamount, I guess it's tantamount to some form of avodah zarah, but he says they were not prepared to distort the Torah. Yeah?
To what extent would that apply to applying an interpretation to something? For instance, in this particular case here of Shor Shemaga, not really, if you would say, well, the Biuri says that it only applies to people, whatever.
100%. If you say it as there is a school of thought, represented by the Meiri, who says this does not apply to Christians and Muslims, people who are Gedurim Bedarche Adasois, right? I in Professor Berger's lecture on this, right? So he says, that's okay. But I cannot say a lie. That would be a classic example. In other words, if they ask me about this, they encounter this Gemara somehow, I don't know, right? And they ask you about it, you can say, look, there is a school of thought, the Meiri, who says this and this. But I cannot say, for example, oh, yes, everyone says that would be a lie. Certainly not everyone says it. The Meiri says it, and the Udi'ime, right? So that's where it comes into it. Someone asked me, is it true that Jews, the court, would kill people, skiller for Chilul Shabbos? I say, yes, it is true. But, I should point out that A, we have not done it since the days of the destruction of the temple. B, even when we did it, there were many, many conditions, right? So I can give an interpretation, it's valid. Do I have to give them every single time? No, but I cannot lie about something, I cannot distort the reality, right? Even if it wins the argument. Yeah.
I was about to ask why a bunch of Israeli college students, why rabbis are opposed to psychology. So I just mentioned a few rabbinic works are pro-psychology, and I left the rest out.
I would say the following. I would say that, look, there are rabbis opposed to psychology. Probably they're opposed to it. Some of them are opposed to it because they feel that there are aspects of it which differ from the Torah in terms of free will, in terms of maybe sexual mores, in terms of things like that. And that's legitimate, and therefore they have objection to certain aspects of it. Right? There are some rabbis who might be opposed to it because they don't know anything about it. But there are significant major rabbis who are not only psychologists themselves, but they certainly are exponents of it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think to give the impression that all rabbis agree on anything is probably wrong, right? I mean, it's not, right? The case, the counterexample, the Yamshul Shlomo asks on himself, we have till what? Another 3 minutes, right? Okay. The Yamshul Shlomo asks himself, what about the Shivim Zakenim, when they translated the Torah into Greek, did they not switch things around? Right? Bereshis Bara, that type of stuff. There, Rav Hutna says, he never understood. The Gemara says that they miraculously, they all had the same translation and the same corrections. And he says, I never understood why it was miraculous. Of course they agreed. They're in separate booths. If they're in the same room and they all agree, that would have been amazing. It's like, you know, the separate rooms they agree. Right. But anyway, so there the Yamshul Shlomo asks, he says that, well, didn't they sort? So here, his answer, if I understand it correctly, I'm not sure if I understood correctly, but I think his answer is this, that the Greeks, if the Greeks would have read it in the way that, in the most accurate translation, there would have been a distortion. Their distortion is like a correcting lens. Is anyone here would look through my glasses lens, right? What they'd see is just blur, right? So my glasses lens actually distort the light. But since my eyes are lousy, right, Baruch Hashem, I have, right, but since the eyesight is not great, so I need the distorting lens so that I can actually see. So the Yamshul Shlomo would say that the changes in the translation that the Shivim Zakenim did were like a distorting lens because the Greeks had lousy vision.
Correcting lens.
But the correcting lens will distort someone with normal vision. But for someone with bad vision, they'll... Yeah.
So it makes sense for an elephant for an operation, but what about the Arnefet? So how would the Yamshul Shlomo explain? Because you switched in Emma's Makoshri.
Well, because there they didn't actually distort. Instead of saying the word Arnefet, they just said a non-kosher quadruped.
Right.
So that's not a distortion. That's a concealment of something. Right? That's already a different story. That may not be the same level. If they translate Arnefet as a crocodile, that would be a distortion. But if they say the llama is a quadruped, right, as in the famous Monty Python sequence, right, that would be okay, right? Ramevin Yovin. Okay.
I forgot the name of it, but isn't there a concept of where we specifically lie to non-Jews to obscure ideas?
Well, the problem is censorship. We often self-censor stuff, right? So we'll say that Akum does not refer to the wonderful crusaders amongst whom we live, who are, of course, pious and observe the Shabbat Mitzvah, aside from the little thing about murder and theft, right? So we are referring to the Ovdei Kochavim or Mazalos. That's a good question. I know there's an Igros Moshe who addresses that. One final point. Tefillah. How do you daven for tshuva? Right? The Gemara in Brochus, Daf Yud, has, you know, Rav Meir and Bruria, right? So Rav Meir, there's thugs in the neighborhood who are bothering Rav Meir, right? Punks, street youth. And so Rav Meir says to his wife, I'm going to daven that they die. And she says, don't daven they die, daven they should do tshuva, right? And we paskin like Bruria, right? Rav Meir, daven they should do tshuva, they did tshuva. So, and Hashiveinu Amino Sarzach, the special tefillah, we can daven for people to do tshuva, we daven for us to do tshuva. So, the Maharsha asks, how could you daven that someone does tshuva? Hakol bidei shemayim chutz meyira shemayim. How can you daven that? Right? So there's a few answers here. One answer is the Maharsha, by the way, doesn't answer it. He just says, lose it b'tzarech iyun. So one answer is that the Chido says he was davening for himself because they were bothering him. So you're allowed to daven for yourself. So for himself, Hashem would intervene, right, to prevent them from hurting him, right? Others say that the Igros Moshe says you're allowed to daven that the circumstance they should meet circumstances, they should encounter a person, a shir, a seminar, something that will change them. So I can daven. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do that. That's something like the Likudas HaBechira thing, right? You've got Bechira, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu can change the Likudas HaBechira based on your environment and this and that, make it easier for them to do tshuva later. So I'm davening that they should encounter some charismatic personality, right, etc., and they should hear a great shir, and they should have a great cholent, or whatever, usually it's a cholent, and they should, etc., right? That's what you should daven. The Chazon Ish says, quite a chiddush of an answer, the Chazon Ish says that what do you see? It's only Hashem won't intervene out of Hashem's initiative, but if the human being asks him to intervene, that's not intervention. We requested it. So it can't, it's like if some imperialist country, it would actually be true that the local population actually asked us to intervene. If that was actually true, then it would not be intervention, right? The people asked for it, right? Usually it's a lie, right? But in this case, someone asked for it, we asked for it, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not intervening. He's actually doing he's doing what the human being wants. It's a different human. No, Kol Yisrael Guf Echad, it's all the same person. So that's it, the little introduction to the idea. Rabbi Orlean sent you a PDF. There's extensive stuff in the PDF with all the Makoros that I spoke about now. That's it. Thank you very much for listening.
We'll make it downstairs. People are down here. So, thank you.
Pleasure.